Today, on Rainbow Country, my coverage of Indie Week Music Festival and Conference, plus Michelle Schacht. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Everyone, and welcome to Rainbow Country, as I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country, I'm Mark Tara. So, this is episode 178. Today, my coverage of the 17th annual Indie Week Music Festival and Conference. Like I've said before, whenever I cover a festival, an event, I try to bring the LGBT aspect of that event to you. Today, we'll hear from Dinosoul, an indie pop duo from Pittsburgh, plus Matt James, winner of the Best Country Album at the Native American Music Awards for his 2019 record, A Miner's Prayer, and two-time Grammy-nominated recording artist, Michelle Schacht. We'll talk about her new music, her new tour, and more. But up first, Dinosoul.
Come
Carolyn and Donnie from an alternative indie pop rock group from Pittsburgh, Dino Soul. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
How are you both doing?
We're doing good. Yeah, doing well. Doing well.
I love the energy. This is the Indie Week, and we're surrounded by media of all sorts. This is my first time at Indie Week. Have you been here before?
No, we haven't.
This is our first time also.
Yeah, how are you finding it?
Great so far. This is our first day. Just kind of taking all of the information in and navigating the city. So this is our first time playing in Toronto also.
Okay. What do you think of Toronto?
I personally love Toronto. It's been a long time since I've been up here, but it is a beautiful, diverse city. So, and extremely big city. So.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's awesome. It's beautiful. I like it. Even though there's like snow and it's November, which I, you know, we're gonna have to lug our instruments through that later. But yeah, I'm kind of not looking forward to that. But it's really nice, and it's not that cold out. It's not
bad. Not today. It's pretty good. Yeah.
So let's start here, and I think you know where I'm going to go. I think the name Dino Soul. How did that come about?
Oh gosh. So the name Dino Soul, you know, we kind of we were kind of going through like a, I guess you could say, a journey of some sorts, a spiritual journey. We were partners, and it was a year into our journey that we started to kind of like start questioning things and wake up together, like spiritual awakening, and we wanted to form a band to kind of get our messages out there. And in that time, we had to come up with a band name, and we were realizing, too, that there was, like, dinosaurs had some kind of significance in our, like, everyday life. Like, just little figurines kept popping up. It was really strange. Just a lot of, like, synchronicities with them. But anyway, so we were looking at different dinosaur names, and we couldn't find anything because there's so many different dinosaur band names, like Dinosaur Jr. and, I don't know, so many different ones. But anyways, we were taking a walk one day, and we came up with the name Dinosoul, which is perfect because it means old soul. Dino means old, and then soul. It kind of brings in the spiritual aspect of our music. So it's not spiritual in kind of like a turn-off way. It's more of just like our universal messages, you know, that people can relate to. So again,
there's a lot of psychology behind it too, our band and everything, and just self-actualization and responsibility. It's a multi-universe, or, well, maybe, yeah, universal language, I guess.
And you're a duo, the two of you. And musically speaking, and how long have you been creating music together?
It has been 3 years now.
Three and a half, probably.
Three and a half, yeah. I actually have never been in a band before, so this is my first time doing anything like this.
And how did you guys meet?
Well, we met at a gym because I'm a personal trainer, and Carolyn was looking for training sessions, and I was her trainer, and then we started dating like a couple months after we met each other, and then a year after that we formed the band.
So I was her client.
Okay.
Yeah.
And here we are today.
And here we are.
How would you describe the sound of Dinosoul?
There's so many different genres in there that it is really hard for us to describe our sounds. One thing that really sticks out is we are kind of more of like a dark indie pop band, ethereal, very, I would say, synth and beat driven. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it depends really, because our album 11, I mean, there's so many different genres on that album. I think we are definitely in this singer-songwriter kind of pop territory. We definitely are going for more of that commercial sound, but there's like an emotional, like a, not emo, but an emotional kind of darkness to our music. A little sad.
Sad could be good.
Yeah.
I want to talk about one of your songs in particular, Waiting For You.
Okay.
What's that song about?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy.
Waiting For You.
I'm waiting for you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, I mean, we've kind of been asked this question. It does evolve over time. Because when we write songs, we're not specifically always thinking about exactly what we're writing the song about until afterwards, until we reflect on it. But I think a lot of this song is not only waiting for, like, the right time when people come into your life, whether it's a partner or a relationship, but, like, waiting for you to, like, discover yourself and who you are. Like, and you're kind of waiting for yourself to become who you really are. And, like, I spent a lot of my life trying to figure out who I am, and which is always a journey and it's a process, but, like, I still am who I am, but I'm, like, constantly evolving and just, like, you know, working on self-love. But
can I say something?
Yeah.
I think a lot, too, when we say waiting for you, you know, we think of partnerships and stuff like that. And a partnership, friendship, anybody that's put in front of you is actually a reflection of yourself, right? They're usually reflecting back something about yourself, whether good, bad, whatever, and you have to accept that. So kind of like you're waiting for whatever for that to display. So it's along those lines too. And like she said, it kind of evolves over time. So our meanings of our songs.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
you're
you.
Welcome. So we are here to love, to connect, to inspire. Our vision is to let our music find the people who need it in their lives. Powerful words from a duo. Are you finding that people are connecting to you, connecting to your music on a deeper level?
I think that's like our goal. Because, you know, being artists for these last couple years, even though we're here at Indie Week and we're trying to promote ourselves, we try to maintain a healthy level of not forcing our music too on people and just kind of like really feeling into the intention of the songs that we're writing, how we're recording it, and how we're putting it out there, how we're performing it. So we want to connect to the people that want something like this, that are feeling and that are looking for this type of music. And hopefully that attraction, that like law of attraction, will kind of be displayed.
Yeah, I think that to just kind of speak on that too, you're asking if we kind of attract those people. And after our shows, we get so many people, not so many people, but we get people come up, say that really moved me. It took me to a different place. And that's all we want. And I have a little ritual that I do before I go on stage is really making sure my heart is open, that everything is truthful, that is coming out from a good place so that we can connect to those people. And it definitely solidified when those people come up and say that they felt that. So, yeah.
So animal rights, LGBTQIA+ rights. Do you consider yourselves activists?
I would say that we definitely are activists. I mean, we're not out there protesting all of the time, but we are very open. I think being open, being honest about who you are as activists is very important in this time. Go ahead.
Yeah, and also, you know, doing your research behind, you know, exploitation of people or animals, and even for the LGBT community, QIA+ community, I mean, you know, just making sure that everyone is included in it and everyone feels safe. So our messages and our activists, part of what we do is like a lot of social media, and just living our truth, you know, being out as partners, not being afraid, you know, or if certain people don't have the opportunity to be safe and out like we are, we want to show that it's okay.
To inspire
people.
Yeah. And I wanted to say, too, that we make sure that everything that we do is within our values. I mean, we've been challenged a lot with this. We own a business. We also have been asked to play shows that maybe did not follow in our values. So, you know, that's kind of just being mindful where our money is going to be, who is supporting, you know, these organizations, or where their money is going to, and making sure that that makes sense for us.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
You guys have toured the U.S. You performed at South by Southwest?
We did, yeah. We performed at a Sober, we're also Sober. Sober by Southwest, it was called.
And you've toured the Northeast, the Midwest. Favorite part of touring?
It's playing shows every night, honestly, and connecting with people, for me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like that, but I like seeing the world, too. I like definitely just, you know, being in a new area and experiencing that culture. I mean, that's always fun.
Yeah.
Least favorite aspect of touring?
As I get older, just the whole, like, loading and lugging and setting up. I don't know. I just wish I could just, like... Well, obviously, we're, like, a lower-tiered artist, but, like, you know, just the whole setup, it's very anxious. Sometimes, you know, making sure everything works.
Yeah. Mm.
But, yeah.
Three quick questions.
Sure.
Okay. Red or white?
Red or white?
Red or white?
I'm going to say white.
Okay.
You mean as a color?
Take it however you wish.
I like color white because it goes with a lot. It can go with anything. Red with, like...
I think of it personally as booze. Red wine or white wine?
Oh, yeah.
I think I like white. Yeah.
Day or night?
I like night.
But you didn't say what color you liked.
Yeah, I did. I said white.
Oh, okay. You said night?
Yeah, I did.
What? Sorry. Yeah, I guess for me, night too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Leather or lace?
Well, because I'm a vegan, definitely lace.
I'm going to have to go with lace too.
Unless I actually, well, if it's fake leather, then I would probably wear leather over lace. It's just not my style.
Thank you both for being on the show. Dinosaur.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
While you lie in bed, I know it. Hey, this is Rye Daisies, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
For all things Dinosoul, make sure you check out their website, dinosoulmusic.com. Up next, he won the Best Country Album at the 2019 Native American Music Awards for his record, A Miner's Prayer, Matt James.
Everything I say or do never seems to turn out right. There'll come a time when push comes to shove and I'll only be in your way. So by the time you read this letter, I'll already be long gone. Don't come and find me, there's a reason you're better off on your own. No second guessing, no more waiting, you don't have to be alone. See all the reasons why you gotta live and let live. We both gotta give if you wanna make it right. I'll be the one to take the fall just to finally watch you rise. So be the best that you can be, baby. This is your time to shine. Don't come and find me. There's no reason you're better off on your own. No second guessing, no more waiting, you don't have to be alone. Don't wanna hold you back, believe me, it's killing me to walk away. Because I love you too much, baby, to keep hurting you this way. I'm already gone, baby, I'm already gone. I say, baby, baby, find me, there's no reason you're better off on your own. No second guessing, no more waiting, you don't have to be alone. Don't wanna hold you back, believe me, it's killing me to walk away. Because I love you too much, baby, to keep hurting you this way.
Matt James, hi.
Ani.
How are you?
I am fantastic. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I am well. We're recording this during Indie Week here in Toronto.
Yeah.
How many Indie Weeks have you been a part of, Matt James?
How many Indie Weeks have I been a part of?
Yes.
I can honestly say that this is my first one.
And me too.
I'm so excited to be here.
I have in my hand A Miner's Prayer. Best Country Album of the Year for the Native American Music Awards. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Congrats on that. This was what, for 2018?
That's for 2019.
2019.
Yes.
When you got, okay, let's start here. When you got the nomination for Best Album, what went through your mind when you got the nomination?
Well, just receiving the nomination, I was just kind of blown away, and I couldn't believe that I had kind of got to that point in my career where, you know, you start off as having just this kind of dream, and I kind of went into it with zero expectations and high hopes that, you know, maybe someday something like this would arise and happen. I just didn't really think that it was going to happen this fast.
Is this your first record?
This is my very first country album.
Okay, you said country album. Have you released before?
I have been touring, I'd say probably for the last 11 years of my life, with a very successful Canadian bluegrass group, which I'm one of the founding members of, the Kanaki Bluegrass Boys. And after doing that for about 11 years, we did things such as, we did the soundtrack for a movie that was produced by Jason Priestley called Cass and Dylan, which actually won a bunch of awards at the Music Film in Motion in Sudbury, Ontario. So we got to be a part of that, and then just with the group itself, we've won multiple awards at the Canadian Bluegrass Music Awards, from Best Vocal Group of the Year to Merging Artist of the Year. I won Bass Player of the Year 4 times and Entertainer of the Year 4 times. So I kind of been in the music scene for the last 11 years, so I've always been a country lover at heart. And I just thought that it was my time to kind of, it was probably one of the hardest decisions I actually had to make, was to
be solo,
to do a solo career. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're a part of something that's already so successful, the biggest mistake a lot of times that artists make is branching off and going on your own. I didn't do it because I wanted the spotlight. I did it because, as a songwriter, I just really felt that my songs needed to be heard.
Yeah,
so
for artistic reasons?
Absolutely. So it actually turned out to be one of the greatest and best things that I ever did. So I'm glad I did it.
So when they called your name, because I always ask this, whether it's an Academy Award winner, a mm-hmm. Grammy winner, a Juno winner, whatever, mm-hmm. but when they called your name, and you won,
yeah,
for Best Album,
mm-hmm.
Best Country Album. Describe that moment. How did you feel?
Speechless. Took my breath away, to be honest. You know, when I seen the nominees that were in the category, Marty Stewart was one of the finalists who made the bill for nomination. I was kind of sitting there, and I was, out of all 3 nominations that I had, because I was also nominated for Best Video Concept of the Year, and I was also nominated for Breakout Artist, Best New Artist of the Year. Out of all 3 of those, I think the one that kind of meant the most to me, not that anyone is less, but I really, really, really wanted the Country Album of the Year, because I put so much of myself into this project and went through so many highs and lows and so much struggle just to get the material for this project, and worked countless amount of hours putting the whole thing together. So when they called my name, I basically broke down in tears, because it's a really surreal moment that you come to, and you're just kind of taken by that moment. And then I basically ran out of the room because I
into the press.
I didn't know what to do. So everyone was just like, Matt, you got to go accept your award. Why did you run out of the
room?
Oh,
really? Okay.
I ran out of the room because I went to go call my mom. That was the first person that I wanted to kind of take that moment in with. Where's my mom after losing my dad? I know that he's with me every day, and
absolutely.
I only got one parent left, so I want to give to her as much as I can, seeing that she gave me this gift of life, so I feel like I owed that moment to her, so.
Well said.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself as a country artist, or was this just music produced in the genre of country?
Well, I really hope that people view me as a country artist. I do see myself as a country artist, but I don't want to put, how do I say this? I don't want to put any boundaries on myself or box myself in. I know that in today's world of music, I think preservation of a particular genre is important. So me being identified and labeled as a country artist, I'm trying to stay as true to it as possible, but at the same time, kind of break the, I don't want to break any boundaries or cross any barriers that I'm not supposed to, but I'm definitely pushing the limits to what I can, what's accepted.
It's great, because when you think of, say, a Native American, an indigenous individual, you don't necessarily think country music.
That's right.
You know? Well done.
I'm a cowboy native.
A Miner's Prayer? Talk to me about this song in particular.
Miner's Prayer. I was basically surrounded by miners my entire life. I would say that, you know, my dad was a miner. My uncles were a miner, and I was a miner 13 years ago because I was under the age of 19, but...
Okay.
For me, I have so much respect for people who go underground and make that their way of making a living. But this song, in particularly, I ended up having a dream just shortly after my dad had passed away, and he came to me in my dream, and it was almost like I was him, but I wasn't. And I was able to see through his eyes and hear with my ears and his ears, if that makes sense. But he gave me this vision of being underground, and there was a bunch of holes that were drilled in this wall, and they were all kind of connected. Like, it almost looked like a great big mesh. And I guess while he was connecting the detonator, the line, it came loose. So he had to go and fix it. And as he was fixing it, a big piece of overhanging rock collapsed, and his life was spared. So in that moment, he basically got down on his knees and started to have a conversation with God, and started talking to God, and almost word for word, a miner's prayer was his prayer. It was my dad's conversation with God, and the first thing I did as soon as I woke up was basically, I said, thanks, Dad, you know, thanks for coming to see me in my dream. For that's basically the only way I could see him now, but for presenting me with such an amazing idea and concept for a song, I knew that his prayer was going to be the title track of my album, and I knew that it was going to be something amazing and spectacular. It was about 3:30 in the morning, so I ran out to my garage, got a fire going, and it was the middle of winter, and I grabbed pen and paper, and within, I'd say, about 6 minutes flat, I had written the entire song out. I grabbed the guitar and set my phone up, and I hit record. And I can't even explain how it all came together, but I knew every note, every melody, every word, and I was able to play it from start to end. So that's how I kind of knew that this was a gift. So I'm so thankful for it, and I'm thankful for the incredible experience. We went down to Nashville to record this project after a producer reached out to me. I actually hung up on him because I thought he was a telemarketer. So I ended up calling, he called me back and he's like, "Hi, is this Matt James?" And I was like, "Well, anyone who's identifying me by that name clearly knows me from the entertainment world, because that's my alias name as a performer." And so I said, "May I ask who's speaking?" And he says, "This is Kenny Royster. I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Are you interested in recording with a Emmy Award winning producer?" And I was just like, "Is this a prank? Is this a joke? Because I'm gonna be really pretty upset if, you know, I find out that this is just kind of like a prank call." It turned out to be the real deal, and we had set a date for August to go down to Nashville to record. And 2 weeks before we went down, I got the worst phone call of my life that my dad passed away. So we had to kind of set that project aside. And I didn't think that I'd get a second opportunity or a chance, because moments like that just don't come twice. But I guess he believed in me enough to give me a second chance. And right on New Year's Day, we went down to Nashville, Tennessee. And January 1st, we began the process. And it was the beginning of something magical. And that's how we basically formed the album. So if it wasn't for Kenny Royster reaching out to me, I don't think that this project would have been as successful, nor would it have been the same had he had not. So I'm so thankful for that, and for everyone who believed in me and told me that, "Just go do it, Matt, you know, like, what do you got to lose?" I was like, $20,000? But I don't know, it opened up so many doors, and it gave me a voice and gave me a platform, not only that I can use for myself, but I really feel like it's important for me to be a voice and an advocator for many First Nation and Indigenous people, to kind of give them some hope, knowing that I came from absolutely nothing, and here I am sitting in front of you today.
Well said. Matt James, thanks so much for your time. Well done.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
There's more to this life than digging dirt, risking your life for all it's worth. I take a knee and pray to God, "Lord, keep me safe and keep me strong. Give me the strength to carry on. At the end of the day, all I ask of you is to bring me home." I still want to hear my children laugh. I still want to hear my babies cry. I give all I got just to keep my will to survive. This place is dark and it sure is deep. It's the only life that I know for me. This is dark and dreary hole deep in the ground. Now these bones of mine, they're getting old. They're worn and tired from this heavy load. There's not much left to me, all I ask to bring me home. I still want to hear my children laugh. And I still want to hear my babies cry. I give all I got just to keep my will to survive.
dust is gone. I can keep my feet on the solid ground, but I'm afraid my time here on earth has come and gone. And at the end of my life, all I ask of you is to carry me home. I still want to hear my children laugh.
Hey, this is DJ Cosmic Cat, and you are tuned to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
For all things James, Matt James, make sure you check out his website, mattjamesmusic.com. Michelle Schacht came to prominence in the 80s and 90s, nominated for 2 Grammy Awards. She has a new tour, Ready to Rumba, as well as new music, Musical Chairs. We'll talk about her new tour, her new music, as well as what happened in June 2011, Wild Goose Festival, a Christian event that included gay Christians, she responded to an audience member's question about homosexuality, saying, "Who drafted me as a gay icon? You are looking at the world's greatest homophobe. Ask God, see what he thinks." March 17th, 2013, she made an impromptu speech against same-sex marriage during a concert at Yoshi's nightclub in San Francisco, which led to some audience members leaving in protest. She also was on CNN with Piers Morgan, where she said she was not homophobic. I met up with Michelle Schacht when she was in Toronto for her Ready to Rumba tour. We had to stop the interview partway through for her to do her sound check, but then she came back and we continued our interview. Up next, Michelle Schacht. Michelle Schacht, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I'm a little shocked right now to be here with you. This is kind of crazy, kind of cool. You have new music out, Ready to Rumba. Talk to me, first of all, the style, the genre that this new music is in from Michelle Schacht.
So you remember when Graceland by Paul Simon first came out?
Mm.
It wasn't like it was a protest album, but you felt like you were participating in this worldwide dissent against the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Okay.
And then remember when Buena Vista Social Club came out, and it was so sultry and sexy and exotic, and you felt like, well, I don't know anything about Latin music, but I'm participating in this.
Yeah.
Somewhere between those two albums, I have created musical chairs, and it is all Cuban rumba idioms.
Okay.
But now I have to break down idiom for you. So when I was first signed to a label at the time called Mercury Polygram,
mm-hmm.
they thought they were getting themselves a folk singer. And my first studio album was folk rock.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think my second album was? Big band swing. And it was every idiom of swing music, because think about it, there's jazz, there's bebop, there's Dixieland, there's western swing. When you say swing, mm-hmm. you're covering a wide range. And I didn't know then what I know now, which is that I am an idiomatic songwriter, mm-hmm. that I work with idioms in the same way that some people will work with one style and just go deeper and deeper into it until they've pioneered and explored it as far as it can go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. It could be said I'm shallow and superficial. I'm peripatetic and I hop from idiom to idiom. But what I really am nurtured by are the concepts. And until I find an idiom that has enough weight to mm-hmm. it that it can carry my concept, I won't really commit to what my style or genre is.
Mm-hmm.
That was obviously very, very confusing for a label, because after the big band swing album, what do you think I did? Bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my legacy. This is what I've been doing for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Changing it up. So you're are you on tour?
This is the beginning of an adventure.
Okay.
So we were talking just a minute ago about that giddy feeling when you know, you're fresh, you're not tired, you're not looking back going, I'll never do that again.
You're excited.
This is the beginning of an adventure.
And you're sharing the stage with a tap dancer, a tap performer. And I'm interested to know, first of all, your grandmother, she had a dance studio. She taught tap. You never studied tap, I don't think. But was that in your mind, in maybe in your subconscious, to reach out to someone? Was your grandmother influential in having a tap dancer be part of your show?
Well played, Mark. That is a great question. Because, yes, my grandmother, when you saw her in a line of tap dancers, mm-hmm. she sparkled. She shone. And you know why? They were all so serious and, like, paying attention to the technique. Mm-hmm. She would smile. She made it look like it was the most fun, relaxing mm-hmm. thing. And when I look at my influence as a performer, it's much more of that kind of showmanship.
Okay.
Now, more specifically to your question, no, I learned, like I'm about to school you, that what he's doing, they no longer call tap dancing. They call it body percussion.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's new for me.
I know. Think about it. So we've got beatboxing. We know what that
right.
is. But there is an entire international community of body percussionists who meet in places all over the world and share these rhythmic excursions. And he is very, very much a part of that tradition. Let me tell you a little bit about my body percussionist, Max Pollock. He grew up in Austria and saw Fred Astaire on TV and was like, that's it. I'm going to be a tap dancer. It just so happened that a legacy tap dancer was going through hard times, coming through Austria on his last legs, literally, and recruited young Max to be his demonstration model, he could only tell Max what to do. He could no longer do the moves. Mm-hmm. So Max acknowledges that he learned at the feet of a master, and shame on me that I don't know this legacy tap dancer's name. And he brought that to the United States a good 25, 30 years ago. He got deeply embedded in the American tap dance tradition. Mm-hmm. And I wish I knew more of the details, but at some point, he found himself in Cuba with an organization called the Muñequitos de Matanzas. They are, in Cuba, when a family band gets going, it's not just like one generation, second generation, third. They're now in their fourth generation. Mm. So somewhere along the way, Max introduced tap rhythms to the Muñequitos. Well, they embraced him, like, come on in, you're part of our gang now. And so they developed something called rumba tap. Mm. So rumba is a rhythm-based Afro-Caribbean tradition that is so Afrocentric in its expression that bringing the tap traditions in was like, it's a natural match, right? But it took a visionary artist like Max to recognize how to incorporate vernacular tap traditions mm-hmm. into this vernacular rumba
okay.
tradition.
Okay.
So figure, he did that 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and here I have this privileged opportunity to work with, he's a master in his own field, mm-hmm. bringing that experience to my very folkloric approach right. to rumba. So right. he's my adult supervision, if you want another trick.
How did you meet Max?
I went to Cuba in 2016, mm-hmm. and he was on that trip, and it really was a master class by a master musicologist named Ned Sublette. And Ned just has this knack of attracting to him all these savants, you know, people in their own world that know so much. Mm-hmm. And this man, I mean, 4, 5, 6 rumba performances a day. I still didn't get it. It was coming at me so fast that I was like, okay. The best thing I can say about what Ned insisted on was we could not experience the culture mm-hmm. without understanding that there was a spiritual root mm-hmm. to it. That this was a 400-year-old tradition mm-hmm. that was a narrative of survival against all odds. And so we couldn't just like, oh, I'll take this, I'll take that. No, we had to take it all. We had to go to the Vodun priest's house. We had to go to the, you know, the Yoruba ceremony where they've got a chicken chained up. And you know it's not going to end well for the chicken by the end of the night. You know, stuff that I was very apprehensive about engaging with.
Right.
But a lot of this tradition, this spiritual tradition, had been syncretized in Cuban culture with Catholicism.
Okay.
So a lot of the orishas that had been brought over from Africa had been syncretized with the Catholic saints. So in a sense, sanitized, but no, it's a big old grab bag of spiritual influences and traditions. And so I think I'm answering your question. I went back a second time, mm-hmm. and the second trip was with a vacuum cleaner.
I know. It's all good.
I rode a vacuum cleaner to Cuba, and that was to the Oriente, which is the eastern side of the island, mm-hmm. which is actually where rumba was born, mm-hmm. on Santiago de Cuba. And I still didn't get it. And then my third trip to Cuba in 2017, it all started coming together. I mean, okay. it was rumba, 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 day okay. and night. And finally I realized that much like the pride that I take in my, you know, my own folk traditions being, you know, like I say, musicians from other parts of the world, okay, they get one style, one. But the United States has given birth to so many folkloric traditions
right.
that why, as an American artist, would you just say, oh, I play jazz, oh, I play this mm-hmm. or that? I'm like, own it all. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that the Cubans got us beat hands down because the rumbas got, you got Changui, you got Wawanko, you got Mozambique, Yambu, Waracha, Comparsa, all these different idioms. And now...
That's impressive, Michelle Shaw.
If you listen carefully, what you now see is, remember how I said earlier, I work with concepts? Then I was like, okay, I'm ready to launch this now. I've got the range of idiomatic styles to take my concept where I need to go.
So you were just talking about concepts. Shell-shocked. Michelle Shocked. Talk to me about your name and the meaning behind your name and how you came up with that. And why you came up with that.
I'm going to take you to the deepest heart of it, which was I'm strapped down in a bed in a hospital, and they're asking me to sign a paper to admit myself for observation.
Was this in a mental institution? And your mom would... Unfortunately.
Yeah. So I had what is apparently pretty common as young adults are making a transition from being dependents to being independent. Things can get a little wobbly. And I like to credit it that I just had a very rich imagination. So I was much more in an imaginary world than I was in a real world. But from an observer's point of view, they decided that I was a paranoid schizophrenic and I needed observation. You know, from a cynical point of view, I'm like, oh, yeah, for the month that the insurance paid for. And then it was like, goodbye. So they're asking me to admit myself, and I literally, they're putting papers in front of me, and I sign different names on every single piece of paper, one of which was a name that I had given a few months earlier when I was arrested in San Francisco at a protest. And that protest was against corporations that had made contributions to the political campaigns of Democratic and Republican candidates. And our observation was that no matter which candidate won, these corporations were going to be the ones profiting from the defense industries generating mega contracts. So that was the name that I'd given at my arrest, Michelle Shocked, because I knew it would be printed in the paper. And I'm like, what are you going to do, arrest me? I'll give you whatever name I want. And it was reported Michelle Shocked had been arrested at a protest against the Cold War policies of the Reagan administration. So now here I am strapped down in a hospital bed, and they're asking me to sign my name. And it's that slow emerging identity that's coming forth. I write Michelle Shocked, and they admit me. After a month, they, you know, discharge me. And now I'm out and about traveling, and I'm with a cadre, a community of people who everyone had done this. You know, my friend Barry, buried alive. My friend Al Schwitz. You know, everybody was taking a name as a voice of dissent. And it outraged me that Wikipedia decided that it was my stage name. That's not my stage name. That is my nom de guerre.
It's who you are.
That is my nom de guerre. And I've heard with IMDb, with Wikipedia, with identity, they say, no, it doesn't matter what your gender identification is. We say this was your birth name, and that's what you have to be known as. So I think there's a lot. Yes, they're interrupting me. Can we pick up?
Yes.
Is that gonna? That's gonna interrupt your flow.
It's all good. It's all good.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say we're gonna have to cut this short, obviously. So I'm just gonna cut right to the end.
For your consideration, I mean, they're taking the tickets now, and the show doesn't technically start for 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But I want to be respectful of you and give you your time to just, you know, get into that space and...
What space?
You know, to put on your show and
did,
be you and...
Did I have that space before my keynote?
No.
I don't know. I don't know.
Out of the taxi, into the... Yeah, let's just take advantage of this time that we have.
Okay.
I mean, because you told me, you said, I don't know what I'm doing, so with this kind of chaos floating in the air, we can really make radio magic here.
I have a gay radio show. Are you okay?
It won't be a 30-minute answer.
I don't know how to handle this, how to deal with this. Are you okay with talking about some stuff from...
And
2011, to get your perspective, to have your voice.
Especially since you heard my perspective from the keynote earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, I set that up.
Okay, let's start. Let's go here. Wild Goose Festival in June 2011, a Christian event including gay Christians.
Right.
You responded to an audience member's question about homosexuality by saying, "Who drafted me as a gay icon? You are looking at the world's greatest homophobe. Ask God. See what he thinks." Okay, on March 17th, 2013, you made an impromptu speech against same-sex marriage during a concert in San Francisco, which led to some audience members leaving. You were on CNN with Piers Morgan, where you said you're not homophobic. I want you, in your words, to say, why do you think things were misunderstood, things were taken out of context? Your time to talk, have your voice be heard, Michelle Schacht.
Thank you for the invitation. However, it's not that I'm going to decline, but I'm going to invite you to join me in what is going to be just actually more confoundingness. I tend to never answer a question directly, and it's not that I'm being evasive. It's that I've learned over the years of talking one-on-one like this that the journey of a conversation like ours can reveal something far more meaningful than an agenda that says, okay, here's my question, what's the answer? So watch this. You're not going to see this one coming. That audience member at Wild Goose, I know her name. Do you know her name?
No.
Okay. Her name is Kristen Rawls. Kristen Rawls is a blogger who, when she... It makes it sound like she was just asking a question from the audience. That's not what actually happened. What actually happened was that earlier that day, I had been sitting out in the audience watching an act on stage. And Kristen Rawls approached me while I was sitting in the audience and did what we now understand to be an ambush interview. So
she had an agenda.
She had an agenda, and more importantly, who are the types of people with agendas that conduct ambush interviews? We didn't know so much in 2011 what was the legacy of the Karl Rovian, David Brockian, Swift boating techniques. If we want to get into Breitbart and so forth like that, we now know a little bit more, but not much. So I would like to propose that a very simple question deserves a straightforward answer, but you and I have a lot of detective work to do to understand who Kristen Rawls was, why she was there, and then what I can show you on my laptop in the fallout from the San Francisco 2013, what I call the Yoshi incident. She was beating the band, and this was her words. "We've got Brandi Carlile. We've got Tegan and Sarah. We've got Melissa Etheridge." She started naming all of these out lesbian performers who were coalescing to create a consensus to basically what I call smear the queer, meaning when I grew up on an army base and they would play like touch football, they would have this style of football playing where it was like a pecking party. You always picked the weakest, smallest one, mm-hmm. and that was the term that they used for it, smear the queer. Mm. And I appreciate now in this climate that what we're basically talking about is a legacy of bullying, of abuse, of finding a consensus. And I just want to say it like this. This isn't the answer to the question that you asked, but I think it's a really direct answer. You would have to be a moron to be a homophobe. Just a straight-up dumbass to be a homophobe, because the nuances of sexual identity mm-hmm. are so... There's like what I love about swing is that it tells the truth of the human heart. Mm-hmm. When we're happy, our heart beats fast. Mm-hmm. And when we're not feeling so good about things, it beats slow. Mm-hmm. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. And no one will ever be able to establish a standard of beauty that is the same for anyone else. Mm-hmm. Now, that's just a fact of human mm-hmm. nature. So if I have the ability to grasp that kind of complexity, do I sound like a moron? I'm not a homophobe. But I hear myself saying those words, and I remember back to the 50s when there was a senator, Joe McCarthy, mm-hmm. calling Americans in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee, basically forcing them to swear a loyalty oath. Mm-hmm. I am not now, nor have I ever been,
right.
a communist.
Right.
And whether it was the early whispers and rumors about my sexual orientation or whether it's my Christian identity, I just believe fundamentally that it's wrong to force people to take a loyalty oath to one or the other. Mm-hmm. I say keep all the complexity, all the richness, mm-hmm. all the nuance possible. Mm-hmm. But that's not good enough for some people. They really want to take that butterfly and they want to pin it to the board.
Do you think in 2019 and 2020 we have this term cancel culture?
Yeah.
Do you think back then, in 2011, do you think that the mentality in 2019, cancel culture, was prevalent in 2011 when that happened? People were trying to silence you, maybe? People were trying to cancel you, potentially? Do you think that that's what that mentality was around even back then?
I do, but when you ask the target of that kind of what I call quarantine... Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much before the words coming out of my mouth sound paranoid.
Yeah.
But I do know that old saying that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yeah. Thank you. I have to say, thank you for allowing me to go there with you, because it's not easy. It's not easy for me as, you know, someone asks, talking about this, because it's sensitive. It's sensitive, you know? So thank
delicate.
You. Thank you for allowing me to go there with you and for you to be so open. So thank you for that. Michelle Schacht.
I am certain that this is why your program is number two. Because this is about human connection.
Yeah.
This is about meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Okay, so... musician or activist? Which one are you?
Now I'm both. I've dedicated my activism to the rights of artists and musicians. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I've integrated the two, and I don't have to make a choice.
Michelle Schacht, thank you.
Hi, I'm Gord Depp of the Spoons. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Say my interview with Michelle Schacht was challenging as well as exciting, both at the same time. Challenging in the fact that within minutes of our interview, she was on stage doing her show. I was very conscious about asking questions that may be opening old wounds, to have her feel a certain kind of way and then have to go on stage. That's not who I am, and that's not what I'm about. That being said, I don't think I'd be doing a proper interview if I didn't ask about what happened in 2011. I will say this, though. I did find Michelle Schacht authentic, engaging, candid, and her tour, Ready to Rumba, was powerful. If you get a chance, check it out. Michelle Schacht, Ready to Rumba. For all things Schacht, Michelle Schacht, check out her website, michelleschacht.com. Don't forget, if you'd like to be a guest on Rainbow Country, get in touch. My email, mark@marktara.com. To keep up to date with all things Rainbow Country, follow me on socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, @MarkTaraMusic. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So get Rainbow Country wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Plus, the official Rainbow Country playlist showcasing LGBT and indie artists featured on the show is now available on Spotify. Just search Rainbow Country Playlist. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Next week, Gay Men's Perspective. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Mm.